When I first moved up to the Bay Area, just driving around, I would see Google self-driving cars all over the place. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. These cars just drive themselves. And I had a dream that one day that I would be able to ride in one. And last week, I was able to ride in a self-driving car. It was amazing. And the whole time, wow. The whole time, I was like, man, I wish I could have one just to drive me around everywhere, you know. But when I was thinking about that, it reminded me of how much I love the Bay Area. I moved up here from Southern California, and for those that maybe have grown up in Southern California or are familiar with Southern California, there is you kind of look at the Bay Area as like the unwanted little brother, you know. Like even though the Bay Area is like older, you know, you just have that mentality just because of ignorance, not because it's true, but because of ignorance. I always thought, Los Angeles sports are better, you know, the food is better. The Bay Area is always foggy. I always thought it was foggy for some reason. Only in San Francisco is foggy, right? And I used to have that thought, but once I moved up here, I realized, hey, the Bay Area is amazing. I grew to love it instantly. I love the culture. I love the air of innovation. You know, just seeing, you know, self-driving cars around. The first time I went to Stanford Shops as an outdoor mall, there was a directory. And what I'm used to back in, you know, like low-tech Southern California is a directory of just like a picture and the name of the stores and just a number of where to locate it. But at Stanford Shops, it was a touch screen, you know, like a big giant thing. And you just touch it and like it gives you like a 3D picture of where you need to go. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I was walking with my wife and my family, and we were walking down the street on University, and this little robot came rolling up to us, and it was a big giant iPad with a face of a girl who was from Missouri, and she's like, howdy, and she started talking to us, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is like WALL-E in real life. And I was thinking about just the innovation that is captured here in the city, and I fell in love with the Bay Area. I fell in love with the weather. I fell in love with the fact that Yosemite is only a short drive away. I love the fact of being next to a body of water and the ocean and the, you know, the bridges and all the culture and the diversity here. And as I was expressing my love for this area, you know, there would be some people who would ask questions like, hey, as a Christian, should you love this worldly city so much? You know, how much of an expression of love should you have for the community that you live in? And I was thinking about that, and as I was thinking about our vision, our vision is very specific. You know, for those that are joining us for the first time, we are right in the middle of our vision series, and the last 2 weeks we talked about what our church stands for, why do we start this church, and what do we envision for our church? And the first week we talked about how the gospel is the foundation of everything that our church does. That the gospel is an announcement. It's a good news of Jesus Christ. And we want to be able to announce this news and be able to proclaim this news to the people around us. And last week, we mentioned that we want to point people to this gospel, to our true north in the gospel, by loving one another. By sharing this unconditional love that we have from God to those around us. And today, what we're going to talk about is specifically where. Where do we want to proclaim this news? Why is it that we are here in the Bay Area? You know, so our vision statement is that we want to point people to our true north, the point people in the Bay Area to our true north in the gospel. And the reason why we specifically put the Bay Area is because we believe that God has placed every single one of us specifically here in where we live, here in the Bay Area, because he desires for us to really engage and to really minister to the people that live near us. So today I'm going to talk about why our church is specifically called to the Bay Area and why our church has a specific mission for the Bay Area. And we're going to see why do cities, why do urban places, why do communities, why does it matter? Well, why is this significant? Then we're going to talk about, what is the plan that God has for these specific cities? What are the plans that God has for these communities that we engage in and that we live in? And lastly, we're going to look at, practically, what do we as a church, what do we as Christians, what do we as people who attend here at True North, what is the strategy and what are the principles that we must uphold in order for us to fill this vision, to fulfill this vision of pointing the Bay Area to our true north in the gospel? So today, we're going to take a look at a passage in the Old Testament. We're going to look at the book of Jeremiah. And we're going to see in Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 4 through 7. And we're just going to see how God calls the people of Israel to live as exiles within the city of Babylon, even though that they have been captured and forced there. OK, Okay, so read with me Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 4 through 7. If you don't have your Bibles, the passage will be up behind me on the screen. Or if you want to take a look at the Bible apps on your phone, you are feel free to do that as well. But this is the reading of God's holy word. It says, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there, do not decrease. But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for for in its welfare you will find your welfare." Amen. Now, as I mentioned before, I really believe that God has placed us here in the Bay Area for a reason, especially if you are a believer today. There's a reason why you are here. And the first point is this, that cities, communities, urban areas, large places where a lot of people gather together to live, that they are the focal point of God's presence and activity. That they are the focal point of God's presence and activity. And basically, in this first point, we're going to talk about why do cities matter? Why do these big urban areas, why does it matter? What is the significance of it? And why is it that God calls us to live where we live? Now, oftentimes, and this is the way I grew up, I grew up in more conservative Christian thinking, where people believe that cities or large urban areas or even just this world is purely negative, and we need to separate ourselves from it, and that we need to retreat from it, and that there's too many distractions. That's why churches go on retreats, right? It's literally called a retreat. You go up into the mountain, you get away from the distractions of the world, you commune with God, you fellowship with one another, and you try to really focus just on God, right? And now I do believe that as Christians that we cannot be completely immersed into the culture and completely immersed into our surroundings. But at the same time, I believe it's equally important for us not to overly demonize the world that we live in. And not to overly demonize the cities that we live in and the people that we are surrounded by. Cities oftentimes and a lot of times can be a very positive thing. Right? There's a reason why people want to move to big major cities. I don't know if you guys know, but the Bay Area, there's just an influx of people that are coming in every single year. And there's a reason for that is because oftentimes in cities, there are opportunities that do not exist outside in rural areas. Right? In cities, there's opportunity for work. There's opportunity for career. There's that opportunities to advance in life. There's opportunities for education. And there's opportunities to experience culture that does not exist if you go deep into the woods of some rural area. Cities are also a cultural hub of the world. It is where food and music and arts come together for people to enjoy and experiment with and to really dive into. Now, these are good things, and obviously, too much of that, an excess of it, can become a bad thing. It can easily become an idol. But I want to be very clear that the vision for True North is not that we will be a church of separatists, separating ourselves from the city and the place that we live in, and to create our own little monastery of Christian believers, but rather that our vision for our church would be that we would be for our city, that we would be for the community that we live in. I do not want us to be separated so that we lose our relevance. Nor do I want us to be so immersed that we lose our distinction. But I really believe that there is a better way, a third way, in which we are not separated from the cities and the communities that we live in, nor are we immersed in it, but that we want to be for it. That we want to be able to engage our communities and the cities that we live in, so that we can share with them and point them to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now the question is does God really want us to engage in this world? Don't we need to be set apart and distinguished from this world? I do believe that we do need to be set apart. I do believe that we do have to keep our distinction from this world. But at the same time, I believe that the reason why God places us to live as aliens, resident aliens on this earth, is so that we can be agents for this world to show them who Jesus Christ is. And that is God's heart in the gospel. Right? God doesn't just save us and rescue us and take us up into heaven. He leaves us here because we are the means in which the gospel is shared. And unless we are able to be for the city and engage the city with this message of Jesus Christ, then I really believe that we are not living according to the mission that God has for us. Now, when we look at this passage in Jeremiah chapter 29, we have to understand the context, and it is very interesting. The people of Israel, when we look at this history of the people of Israel, we see, you know, starting from God calling Abraham from his home country and saying, hey, go to the promised land I have given for you. And we see then, you know, the Egyptians are enslaved in Egypt for 400 years, and then they wander the desert for 40 years, and they're looking for the promised land, and they finally get to their promised land. There they build their city, Jerusalem. They build its walls. They build the temple of God. And then now what we come to here in Jeremiah 29 is that the people of Israel, these very people of God, are now being taken by force by the people of Babylon away from this holy city and taken to a foreign land. They are forced into exile. And when we see that and we wonder, I would think this, that if the people of Babylon had forced the people of Israel to leave their city, their promised land, the city in which God had proclaimed, this is where you will worship me, and force them to live now in Babylon, I would believe, or I would think, that God would send one of his prophets to the very people and say, pray for the destruction of Babylon. Pray that God would give you the power and the might and the strength to be able to overthrow this ungodly kingdom, and then you can return to the very city, the very place in which I have given to you. But instead, what we read and what we hear is something very countercultural. It says to the people of Israel, build houses, live among the people, plant gardens, and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters, and give your sons to marriage and give your daughters to marriage and allow them to have sons and daughters. And he says, do not decrease. And the most shocking statement says, seek the welfare of the city I have sent you into exile. Seek the welfare of that city. God does not command the exiles to pray for the downfall and the destruction of Babylon. Nor does he command the exiles to live as separatists and to live as people who are completely just not engaged in that same community and that culture. But instead he says, pray for the welfare of that city. The word welfare in this Old Testament is the word shalom that we find in Hebrew. And it means peace. By these words, God turned the worldview of the Israelites upside down. The people of Israel believed that they needed to live within their promised land, that they needed to their nation state, that they needed to be ruled by their own king, and that they needed to be close to the center of their life, which is the temple of God, so that they may be able to sacrifice and worship. But instead, God reminds them of something else. He says, my activity and my presence is through you. You are my people, not because of where you are, but because of who you are. And you will be agents of my activity, you'll be agents of my presence to the people of Babylon as you live for that city, as you engage them, as you give your life, not just to take, but to give to those around you. So I believe that this peace and this welfare that God is seeking and that he's speaking about here is also a message for us as Christians, that we are not here just to separate ourselves from what we see as a sinful world. It does not mean that we live above the people around us and say, oh, poor people, let me pray for you that your lives will change. Nor does it mean that we get so immersed in it that when people see our lives that they can't tell the difference between us and a non-believer. You know, I'm sure that there have been some cases, you know, this happened to me many times. There have been some cases in your life where someone finds out you are a Christian. They go, oh, you're a Christian? And they go, me too. And you go, what, you're a Christian? You know, because we're like chameleons sometimes. So we not only need to be not so far above it that we lose our relevance, and not so far into it that we lose our distinction, but there is a middle ground where we are for the welfare of the people around us, to engage them with the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. Now, and we see this even in the ministry of Jesus. We see that in his ministry that he starts very far away from the centers of where people are active. Very far away, and he starts his ministry in the wilderness. And then he slowly moves on until he is in Jerusalem itself. The very city and the very heart of where he is ministering to. And that is why Jesus' main ministry was always in city markets. Why his ministry was always to engage in tax collectors and prostitutes and centurions, right? I mean, you won't find prostitutes in the woods. Why? Because there's no customers. They're always in the cities. And that's why he's there. And because he's engaging these cities because that is where people are located. And the reason why I believe that for us, our vision is specific to the Bay Area is because this is where we live. This is where God has called us. Many of you are here because of job opportunities. Many of you are here because of you're pursuing a particular career. Many of you here are here because you are pursuing education, right? There's you know, PhD students and master's students at Stanford, or what I like to call North Santa Barbara. And we're all here because we're pursuing something in life, but I say for you, the believer, there's a more important reason. God has called you here because he wants you to engage your community. He wants you to be for the people that you are surrounded by. And I believe that this type of life and this type of urban life is continuing to grow. Currently, over 60% of the world live outside of rural areas. 100 years ago, only 14% of the world lived in cities. Now, over 60% of the people live in cities. The estimation is that by 2050, over 85% of the people in the world will be living in some sort of urban city, some sort of place like this. And so we just see that God is focusing on where the people are, and I believe that is what our focus should be as well. So if this is the reason why cities matter, the question that leads us to our second point is this. Do cities matter because it is a human construct, or does God have a specific plan for cities? Does it matter because somehow we have decided that we're all going to live together and create structures and buildings and stuff like that? Or did God always have a plan from the beginning to redeem the cities? And I believe this, that God's plan is the creation of a new city for the people to dwell. And God has a plan to create a new city for his people to dwell. God's plan from the beginning has always been to provide a place of security, culture, and worship. Now, what I'm going to do in the second point is I'm going to talk about three categories that define cities. And then I'm going to show us, as we look back at the past, in the Garden of Eden, that this was something that God had planned even from the beginning. And then we're going to look at the future of what God has in store as he desires to redeem for us a new city for us, for believers to dwell in. So now Joel Kotkin, he's the author of the book, The City, A Global History, and he writes this in his book. He says there's three categories that exist in a city. Cities keep us safe, cities keep us social, and cities help us understand the sacred. Okay, cities keep us safe, cities keep us social, and cities help us understand the sacred. So when we look at modern cities today, what we usually find all three of these characteristics that are present in them. Cities oftentimes provide security and safety, right? There's when you think about it, a lot. You know, why are there so many homeless people, and why are there so many drug addicts? You know, why are there so many needy people that go to cities? Because there's a system there to provide help, if possible. Like suburban areas, like Palo Alto, they don't want a homeless shelter here. Why? You build a homeless shelter, then guess who comes? Homeless people. You don't want a drug rehab center in Palo Alto. Why? You build a drug rehab center, drug addicts will come. But cities, people congregate there because they seek security, they seek safety. In the same way for job opportunities, you go to a specific place for that same security and safety because there's more opportunities in large urban areas. There's better you know, hospitals in cities. There's better clinics in cities. There's you know, systems of safety, whether it's fire departments, policemen, all these things that sometimes that are not in rural areas. So cities provide safety. Also, cities are where culture is developed. from music to arts to food. This is where, you know, it's in the cities, that's where it's the best, right? We see the best of human creativity and innovation. You know, some of the best food is oftentimes in these major cities, right? New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles. This is where we see just delicious food being created, right? We see art and music just being innovated in these large gatherings of people. We think about country, you know, like, oh, what about country music? That's all in the, you know, in the slackjaw yokel areas of the United States. No, like country music is created in Nashville. That's a major city. Right? That when people come together and there's diversity and we see that culture is developed. And lastly, cities is also a place that helps us understand what we worship. And cities are a place that provides for us something to worship. Cities are not a brand new phenomenon. Cities occurred many thousands of years ago, right? And one of the main reasons why cities came up is because it was a place where people to gather around a religious center. Whether it's a temple, whether it's a monument, whether it's just a statue of a deity. And it is there that people understood what was sacred. It's happening even now. It might not be the things that we worship in terms of deity. It might not be that we go to religious centers. But these cities, we go there because they have something that we worship. Right? People flock to Washington, D.C. because they worship power. They want to become powerful. People immigrate to New York. Why? Because they love money. They want to make a lot of it. People are flocking here to the Bay Area. Why? Because they worship innovation and creativity. Right? It helps us understand what it is that we worship. And that is what Joel Calkin, he talks about in terms of what three characteristics are in cities. So when we think about that definition, and we look back at the Garden of Eden, we see that cities are not just a human phenomenon, but it is something in which God had from the beginning, he decided, you know what, this is how I want my people to live. Every time I think about the Garden of Eden, there's a show that I love watching. Okay, I love survival shows, whether it was Man versus Wild or Survivor Man. The best survivor show right now is Naked and Afraid. Okay, sounds weird, but it's entertaining. It's just people, they get naked and they try to survive out in the wilderness for 21 days. And when I used to think about the Garden of Eden, I used to always just imagine Naked and Afraid. Adam and Eve just in the wilderness trying to survive. But when you really look at the description of this Garden of Eden, we see something very interesting. Number one, there was a wall. There was a gate. When Adam and Eve were cast out of the Garden of Eden because of their sin, what happened? God placed angels at the gate, at the entrance, so that they could not come back in. You know, I always just think maybe it's just like ivy leaves or something, you know, but maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But either way, there is an entrance. There is some kind of structure there. And this Garden of Eden and whatever gate or wall that might have been present there, it was there so that there would be safety for Adam and Eve, that there would be security for Adam and Eve. That's why being banished from the Garden of Eden was almost a death sentence to them. It was something where they would no longer be under the protection of this garden, no longer. There's also culture there. When God said, commanded Adam and Eve to name all the animals, they had to use their creativity to name animals, right? I don't know about you guys, but just naming animal after animal, like I would just start like using a word and just using different letters. Like, okay, your dog, your bog, your cog, you know, your fog, you know, just because that's easier. But instead, there's like so many different names for animals. So they really had to use their creativity, and it's very artistic in that way. They had to cultivate the land and create food. And I guarantee you that they were not just like these raw vegans that were just, you know, just taking fruit and just eating the fruit. No, they probably made delicious food. Delicious food. It was a place where I believe that they were fully entertained, where they were fully captivated. It wasn't that they were just sitting around a campfire thinking, oh, what is there to do? But it was a place where there was entertainment and culture. Not only that, but there was worship. The tree of life was in the garden, and they were able to eat freely of that tree of life to remind them of the one who created them. And not only that, but it said in Genesis 3 that God walked in the garden and they heard his sound. And it was a regular occurrence. It was not that God was not, you know, just rarely there, but he was regularly there because he was communing with Adam and Eve. And it was a place for them to worship this God. So this garden was less a wilderness park and more of a structure. I can't describe to you exactly what it looked like, but I'll say that this garden looked more like the cities we live in, not maybe aesthetically, but at least in principle, than just a random wooded area in the mountains of, you know, Appalachian Mountains. That's the only mountain I could think of right now. So when we see that Garden of Eden, then we have to look. And again, I'm explaining this to explain to us, why do these cities matter? Because God has a plan to redeem us, to redeem our cities back to his original purpose. And we see that in Revelation 21 as he describes the new heavens and the new earth. Revelation chapter 21, verse 1 through 4 says this, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people. And God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away.'" The first thing that I want to mention here is that we see in this new city a place of security and safety. When you read verse 1, it says, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away." And it says, "And the sea was no more." And we go, why did Apostle John put that in there? What was that, like, a big thing? Is it because he was so used to being a fisherman and living near the Sea of Galilee? No, it's because biblically speaking, the sea was always seen as something dangerous. The sea was always seen as something evil. The sea was always something that was seen as ominous. And that's why it was so important when Jesus Christ walked on water. It was not just to show that he was God, but it's to show that he had the power to control and to subject under his feet this evil and this ominous thing such as the sea. When he told the disciples to cast their net in and their net was as full of fish, it was to again show them the control and power that he has even over something as dangerous and as ominous as the sea. So here in this description, when it says that the sea was no more, what it describes to the reader is this place is a place without sin, is a place without danger, is a place that is not ominous. And he says, "I will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more." If you can think of a place so secure and so safe, that there will be no more crying, that there will be no more pain, that there will be no more death, we see this in the new Jerusalem that is to come. Later on in the passage, he says that there's gates. We're going to talk about the gates later, and he says there's an entrance to the gate, but that the gate will never be closed. Why? Because it is completely safe. Reading on in verse 15 through 27, there's a lot of hard words here, so forgive me if I cannot pronounce them, but it says this, "And the one who spoke with me had a measuring rod of gold to measure the city and its gates and walls. The city lies four square, its length the same as its width, and he measured the city with his rod, 12,000 stadia. Its length and width and height are equal. He also measured its walls 144 cubits by human measurement, which is also an angel's measurement. The wall was built of jasper, while the city was pure gold like clear glass. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with every kind of jewel. The first was jasper, the second sapphire, the third agate, the fourth emerald, the fifth onyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each of the gates made of a single pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass." And why the author mentions just the adornment of this gate is to show that there is art that exists in this city, that there is beauty that exists in this city, right? And not only that, we see just how incredibly cultured that this place is going to be. In Revelation chapter 7, verse 9, it says this: "After this, I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robe, with palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, 'Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and the Lamb.'" And the picture of this is a picture of diversity. Every tribe, every tongue, every nation coming together, and this diversity coming together to shout together in one voice a song: "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." And when we see the city being measured out in 144 cubits in with rods of 12,000 stadia, and that it's as high as it is wide, we see the exactness of it, the science and the architect of it. So this is a place, not only does it provide security and safety, but it also provides culture. And lastly, it's a place that provides worship. In verse 22 of chapter 21, it says, "And I saw no temple in the city, for its temple is the Lord God, the Almighty and the Lamb. The city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and its lamp is the Lamb. By its light will the nations walk. The kings of the earth will bring their glory into it, and its gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. They will bring into it glory, the honor of the nations, but nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those who are written in the Lamb's book of life." This city, no physical temple exists, because now we are directly in the presence of God himself to be able to understand worship and understand what is sacred. So when we look at the book of Revelation and with the magnificent city that we are waiting for, we see that God had a plan even from the beginning, even from the Garden of Eden. He planned for people like us to live not just any way we please, but in community, in cities, in areas where more and more people that we can engage with are present. And this new Jerusalem that we wait for was only made possible because of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. When we look at Jesus and his mission and his ministry, we see this. He enters into this world and he ministers to cities, right? He ministers to areas where people are gathered. And when we think about where he is proclaiming his message, the message that God's kingdom is at hand, he is in Jerusalem, the very place where his temple existed. And yet he was cast out of his very own city by the very people he came to save. And he was crucified outside the city walls. See, Jesus in his ministry, he came to engage the communities and the cities he lived in. And yet he suffered a death outside of that, of those very cities, so that those that place their faith in him can now go and be his agents to minister in the cities that we are, so that we can claim a new city that he will give us. See, that is the wonderful message of the gospel. Now, for the sake of time, as we move on to the last point, I do want to talk practically here for us as a church. The practical and last point is this, that we are called to live where we are for a reason. We are called to live where we are for a reason. And that's the first principle that I want us to think about. Understand and accept that you are here for a reason greater than your own life. We are here not just for our own welfare, but we are here for the welfare of the city. We are here for the welfare of the people around us. You may have come here because your job called you here. You may have come here because maybe you're coming back home after school. You may have come here just because circumstances happened or for your education. But I believe that if you are a follower of Christ, you are here for a reason. It is not just to excel in your life. It is not just to excel in your careers. It is not just so you can have a couple gap years before you really move on to your entire your true life. You are here because we are resident aliens, and God has placed us here so that we can be agents to the people around us of this beautiful message of the gospel. And for many of us, we are here, and we can think of many other places we could live. I mean, who wants to live in a place where a 1,000 square foot home is $2 million, right? Who wants to live in a place where just like the traffic is uncontrollable? where everything just bottlenecks. And not only that, you know, people just here do not know how to drive, right? I come from Los Angeles. We're all expert drivers. So, I you know, we get it because we've been driving since we were, you know, sometimes, you know, me like 13, but, you know, legally 16. We're expert drivers. But you are here for a reason. Second principle is this. Identify the idols of where you live. And now, guys, I know that in a message like this, you might have thought that maybe the applications would be like, hey, let's give to the poor. Let's be a part of this organization. Let's do that. But I believe that that's something that happens once we understand these principles. Because the most important thing is for us not to look at the city as a group of data and different types of people, but it's to really personify and personalize who these people are that live among us. They are not just statistics. They are real people. And one of the ways we can do that is we identify the idols of the area that we live in. When I first moved up to the Bay Area about 3.5 years ago, there was a lot of news about suicides that were happening in the school district here in Palo Alto. There were cluster suicides where young high school students were you know, taking their own lives. And you know, the articles that I read talked about just the pressure. The fact that, you know, there's a lot of pressure for them to succeed in academics. There's a lot of pressure for them to keep up with the Joneses and keep up with the status of the people around them. And the fact that, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of pressure that came from their parents themselves, just whether it's externally or internally, whether the parents put that pressure on their kid or if the kids put the pressure on themselves, because their parents are all very highly successful, intelligent people. And I ask the question, what is it that people idolize here so much that they were even willing to sacrifice their own children? And what is it that people idolize so much that they were even willing to neglect their kids in this life? And I realized that the idol here in the Bay Area is really the idol of success. You know, we feign that we don't care and we're laid back, but not really. Everyone cares. Everyone wants to be successful here. The first question people ask is, hey, how's it going? What's your name? What do you do? Right, what do you do? Right, identifying the idols in the place that you live is very, very important. Why? Because once that is done, then you can learn to really minister to the people that you are around. Really minister to them. And one of the ways that we can do that is next, learn their language. You know, every community and every city that we live in, we speak English, we speak different languages, but there's a particular language that we speak in different communities. And for the Christian, I've mentioned this many times, but one of the things that we Christians are really good at and bad at is that we speak Christianese without knowing we speak Christianese. You know, meaning if I go to another part of the world and it's a bunch of Christians, I can talk to them and they will understand exactly what I'm talking about. I'll be like, oh yeah, the Lord has blessed me. And you know, do you have a prayer request? I have a prayer request. Please pray that God will bless me and that he will guide me and lead me. You talk to a non-Christian that way, they're like, what the hell are you talking about? We have to understand, learn their language. What is it that people are thinking about and wanting to communicate? And how can we communicate to them the gospel of Jesus Christ in a way that they can understand? That is one way we can be for the city. And lastly, identify the needs of where you live. What are the needs of the people here? What can we possibly have to offer people who come straight out of college, who work for the biggest tech companies in the world and make six figures right off the bat? What do we have to offer? What do we have to offer to people who've lived here for many years, who are CEOs of their companies or CFOs or CTOs and who are, you know, they have shares in this and this and this? What can we actually have to offer? And one of the greatest things I believe that we can offer in this community is community. People are thirsting for real human community. And I believe that is one of the ways that we as a church can be for our city. Let us pray. God, I